Welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I am your host, Jimmy Traina. You're going to hear this a little earlier this week. Normally, we come out on Thursdays, but we're coming out early this week because I was able to wrangle Andrew Marchand of the New York Post and Neil Best of Newsday to talk about the huge Mike Francesa WFAN news in New York. And my producer, Lou Pellegrino, who's handling this episode, was nice enough to say he'd get this episode up early. So the way this SI Media Podcast is going to work is you're going to hear first from Kevin Harlan, the phenomenal play-by-play man for TNT, does the NBA, college basketball, NFL, CBS. And we talk about broadcasting, his career, and a bunch of stuff. Kevin was super nice. He starts the show, and then after Kevin, it will be Andrew Marchand of the New York Post and Neil Best of Newsday to talk about Mike Francesa and WFAN and the huge news on this episode. So stay tuned for that. Here's Kevin Harlan. All right, joining me now, man with the best pipes in the business as far as I'm concerned, and you can hear him all the time now doing the NBA playoffs on TNT. Kevin Harlan joins the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. Kevin, how are you?
I'm doing great, Jimmy. Thanks for having me on. A real pleasure.
The pleasure is all mine. I've been a big fan for a long time. I know you're in an airport right now, the life of a play-by-play man. Give me like the Kevin Harlan schedule just for this week alone. I know you did a game last night, but give me like the Monday, the next 7 days for Kevin Harlan during the playoffs and how insane it is.
Well, we'll get our next series schedule here in the next, I'd say, 24 hours when they get some clarity on how some of these first-round series, Jimmy, are going to go. Our two series that we've been on, Golden State and Houston, are looking like they're going to finish up tonight. In fact, San Antonio's out in Golden State, and that could be a conclusion of that series. We've got tomorrow, which will be a Wednesday night game at Houston, and that would be game five, and Houston's up 3-1, so that would conclude that. I would assume they'll put us on another first-round series if it got to game six or seven, if TNT had that game.
Right.
So we're kind of waiting, actually, and rarely do we go this deep into a schedule and not know maybe in the next 36 hours where our next flight's going to be, but that's kind of the case right now. So you have some options in your pocket, and you make sure you've got flight schedules, Andy, and you move along. It really isn't as difficult as it sounds. We're working about every second or third day, and the adrenaline's pumping, the games are great, the NBA playoffs are not failing to really live up to their expectations in most cases, although our two series have really been duds. We've not had one good game yet, so we're still on the outside looking in, but for the most part, the skill and all the majesty you expect at the game is there, and we're enjoying that, so we're still kind of on hold for our next assignment, and thus our travels on hold.
Is that, you've been doing this so long, but is it still a thing for you where you're doing blowouts and you see, you know, maybe Cavs-Pacers is this close, crazy series, and you're like, oh, I wish I was doing that, or are you just content doing what's assigned to you?
Well, when we got Houston and Golden State, those are the two most talked about teams probably in the league, two of the best teams in the league. And the problem, it's like in the tournament when you get assigned Duke or Villanova or Kansas or North Carolina or Kentucky, when you get them on your schedule and you go to that site, they're usually playing a 16 seed or a 15 seed or a 14 seed, and they're usually blowouts. I mean, it looks good on paper, but when you really get down to it, the games are not very competitive. And that's how it's been in these two series that we got. We arguably got the two most fascinating teams from the regular season, the Warriors and the Rockets, but they have been dominant in their games. And we've really not had anything that's raised our eyebrows. Although each of the lower seeds have won, we weren't doing the games. One was on ESPN, one was on ABC, and so we didn't even get a chance to do those. So
bad luck.
but you feel, Jimmy, I think, you know, so lucky to be in the position to do the games, to be a part of the flavor, and sooner or later we'll get a good game. But I will tell you this, even in light of the lopsided games that our particular crew has called, you still leave the game every night thinking, man, I can't believe that pass I saw in the third quarter.
Yeah.
Or what about that shot in the fourth quarter, that defensive play, or something that really stands out in your mind. And that's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, the Warriors may be blowing people out, but their games, their team is so fun. The players are so fun. Kerr, Popovich. I mean, Popovich obviously not there, but there's still, the NBA is just so thrilling. Even if the games are a blowout, there's still so much going on, it seems like. you just came off the tournament, the NCAA tournament. Obviously, you do the NFL on CBS. Do you have a favorite sport to do?
You know, I like them all. I think I'm doing the three that I was probably built to call: college basketball, NBA, and the NFL. And I like all three the very same. Now, I probably prefer radio over to TV.
Really?
I love the challenge of radio. I think that radio, it calls on everything that a broadcaster has. It calls on your voice, your word usage, your pacing, your descriptive skills, your reporting skills, your inflection. I mean, it just encompasses so much. It truly is a black screen or a blank canvas, and your words, your emotion, your inflection, your word usage colors that picture. And I can't think of anything more challenging on television, and I enjoy the challenge of television immensely, and it's hard to do TV well. But in television, you really are probably the fourth guy in line. It's the picture first. It's the analyst a very close second. It's the graphics, the replay, and all the bells and whistles third, and then probably the play-by-play guy. So I get it when some of the old-time critics and some of the old-time guys start talking about the Ray Scotts and the Pat Summeralls. If a picture's worth 1,000 words, you don't need to be going on and on about what's going on. We can see it. The audience can see it. So it's incumbent on the play-by-play guy to accent the picture, fill in a little bit of what they may not know or whatever. And that's a challenge unto itself. To me personally, I consider radio a much more difficult but probably even more satisfying challenge, just because really most of it is resting on you. And I like that. I'll never have the perfect broadcast, and I'll always be striving for it on both mediums, both radio and TV. But I really enjoy the radio's challenge every night. We put on the Monday Night Football headset, and certainly through the playoffs and into the Super Bowl, which is the very pinnacle of that side of the business, doing the Super Bowl. And the pressure and the honor and all of it is just, it's almost too much to really absorb. So you take it step by step, but it's so enjoyable and so fun.
And you've done 8 consecutive Super Bowls on the radio. I'm not sure if people know that, and that's a very, very impressive thing to have on your resume. You say you like the radio more than TV. Would the ultimate goal for you to be doing a Super Bowl on TV, or you're content with being the radio voice of the Super Bowl?
You know, I like my position right now. I'm working for a great company and a great boss. Our executive producer, the director, is Howard Dinneroff, and he's done over 30 Super Bowls. I've done Masters and Olympics and NCAA Final Fours and all of it. So he has seen it and done it all. And to work for someone like that is really an honor. To work at CBS TV for Sean McManus and David Burson and the fine management team they've got there is an incredible honor, where their loyalty has been just amazing. And to work for them, it is such an, I'm so humbled by being at that place, knowing the great men that have been in those seats before me, the great announcers, the great litany of announcers at CBS, and to be in that conversation on that list is just, I mean, every night I'm just so thankful that I'm there, and wouldn't trade it for anything. But at the same time, I know that to reach that position of being the voice of the Final Four or the voice of the Super Bowl is, well, while it's not unrealistic, it's improbable. And so, well, I just had a conversation about this last night with some young broadcasters about, you know, it's great to enjoy the journey, and there is so much to be built around being a productive, important member of a team, and not having, you know, there can only be one CEO, there can only be one president, there can only be one voice of the Super Bowl for your network, and that with us is is the great Jim Nance. And I think people sometimes say, well, yeah, it'd be great to do it, of course, but I'm a realist too and know that it may not be in the cards. So I'm incredibly content with what I'm doing. And believe me, so honored to have that position. I know that when my days behind the microphone are through, that I will think a lot about how blessed I was to be in that position.
This is going to sound very Pollyanna, but it is a shame that in a perfect world, we can't have everybody who deserves it at least do it once or twice. I mean, I'm thinking of Bill Raftery right now, for example, who,
The
fans love Bill Raftery. I feel like, you know, the fans love Kevin Harlan. The fans love Bill Raftery. They were so, and I understand the circumstances were unfortunate. There was a problem with Greg Anthony and CBS, and that's how Raftery got that job. But that man deserved so much to call a Final Four. And it's, you know, so, I mean, maybe that's something to look at where, listen, maybe down the road, the right things happen and, you know, everyone gets their shot at doing what they're supposed to do.
Well, with Raf in particular, I mean, I know you've talked to him. I know you know him, and I don't know if there's a more joyous man in our business than Bill, who embraces everyone he meets, loves every kid he's called, every kid he's coached, every school he has visited, and is really, I think he'd tell you, say, I would do it for free. And that's when you know that it's not a job, but it's something. It's a calling. It's almost like he was put on this earth to do what he's doing. He's an ambassador for the sport. He cares deeply about it. But there are a lot of guys that may not have that stature, may not be quite as colorful, but are like him. I think of the Fran Fraschillas, and I think right. of, and, you know, and certainly Dick Vitale comes to mind. You know, these guys that have given their lives to the game that will now Dick, I think, calls it for international for ESPN, but you know, these guys have sunk their teeth into that sport and have just developed such deep roots and such an affinity for what it stands for, what they hope it will become and evolve into, that you can feel it when they talk. And that is, it's such a pleasure to work with someone like that. And I've always thought that about Bill. And when Billy Packer was doing the games, I think people thought, you know, Billy Packer is an institution and he may never leave. But as we know in this business, things happen, and it opened up the door for Bill, as you mentioned, and sure enough, there he is. And I can't think of a more fitting way for his career to conclude, whenever it does, hopefully years down the line. But what a perfect person that was to put in that slot, and CBS just, they got it right. And they put him with a well-known name like Grant Hill, and the two of them with Jim, that three-man booth is a joy to listen to, and I know CBS feels like it's never been better, and I would agree.
You said that you prefer radio to TV. So of the sports you do, NBA, NFL, college basketball, which is the most difficult to do on the radio for you, or most challenging?
Radio, the NFL, Jimmy, probably has about as many challenges as any, just because, excuse me, I'm in the, like you said, the playoffs are here, and we're doing a lot of games in a very short time. And
I got you.
Sometimes the voice the next night, the next day isn't what it should be.
You need that hot tea. You need that hot tea.
Yeah, that's right, a lot of it with some honey. But the challenge of doing football is usually our broadcast positions aren't very good. We don't have a TV monitor in front of us. We're usually very, very high. A lot of what the local radio guys have to go through. And we're doing two unfamiliar teams. At least the radio guy with the local team has one team that he could do, you know, blindfolded, and he's just got to learn the other team. We've got to go in there and learn two. And with the, you know, with the added pressure of having a national and international audience and, you know, the high expectations, which are great, and that's what you want, and the challenge that presents. But you've got to go in there and you've got to be on your game. So you've really got to be on your P's and Q's when you're talking about these teams and when you're preparing throughout the week and watching tape and making sure you've got at least the principal players in store and you've got a good feel for what's going on. Each of the sports, even with TV, are a little bit different. Like I was saying the other day that doing college basketball really lends itself, I think, more to an analyst than doing NBA. The NBA is so fast that a lot of times, like, the analyst is doing, you know, kind of cleanup play-by-play
right.
because he's in the middle of a thought, and he's got to, but the thought can't be out in, like, 5 or 10 seconds, and you may have had a shot, a rebound, and a foul in that time. And he's got to kind of cover that with getting back on his story.
That's why
where,
I just got off the tournament,
Jimmy, and there is pockets are there for the analysts to really make an impact in the broadcast. Mm-hmm. They can really sit there and talk about strategy and tell a story. You don't feel as rushed. The kids don't make as many shots. The game isn't as fast. It's a longer shot clock. There are just a lot of different things about the college game. It's not as good as the pro game, but it has other qualities that are better. The alumni, the emotion, the kids, the amateurism, all those things make them different in that regard. But the basic game of basketball is, I think, easier to do from TV, the college side, mm-hmm. than it is on the pro side. On the pro side, you really should just do a radio play-by-play because it's going so fast, they're scoring so quickly, you've got to get in so many commercial mentions and reads and everything else that it just entails a lot on the play-by-play guy, and I think the color guy probably doesn't get his full breath of saying what he wants to say and saying it the way he wants to say it.
Yeah, that's why I was a little surprised you would say NFL is more difficult on the radio, because in the NFL, there does seem to be downtime in between each play, whereas in the NBA, it's, you know, nonstop. But it's an interesting, as a fan, I would think that, but hearing it from you, it makes sense what you said.
Like the NFL is like a march.
Yeah.
And the play-by-play guy talks, he sets up the play, he does the play, he gets out of the play. Now the analyst comes in there and he talks about the play, they look at the replay, they maybe see another view, he throws in one more thing, now I'm setting up the play again, so it's, there's kind of a rhythm there, but there are pockets where the NFL analyst, the college football analyst, the football analyst can sit there and he can really expand and get his point across. I don't know that you can do that as easily because of the fluidity and the speed and the pace of the NBA game. The college game is slower, both football and basketball. I think they do offer avenues for the analysts to get in there and be more productive, have more depth, and get a point across, and you can not interfere with it as much because there isn't as much scoring. In the NBA, like I said, they're scoring about every 7 or 8, 10 seconds, and someone's got to say who made the basket. You've got to recognize what's going on. You can't forget about the game that's going on in front of you.
Do you have a preference, and I guess it would go for both sports, but especially, I guess, in the NBA, I would mainly. Do you have a preference, two-person booth, three-person booth? I had Kevin Burkhardt on this SI Media podcast a couple of weeks ago. He flat out came out and said he hates a three-man booth, you know, NFL, which he does for Fox. Just curious, you've been doing this a long time. Do you have a preference or no preference, two-man booth, three-man booth?
I think in the tournament, in the NCAA basketball tournament, a three-man booth is actually pretty useful. We're doing so many games the first day, a couple games the next, then we go to the regional finals and do two, and then the regional final itself. I think for the college basketball, I think there's enough room there for three. Like, I go back to McDonough and Billis and Rafferty on Big Monday on ESPN. Mm-hmm. Yep. That was such an enjoyable listen, and they played off each other very, very well. And Sean never lost track of the game, and Billis and Rafferty moved together very well. It's all about chemistry, certainly, but I think you get two knowledgeable people there. They've got some strong views on the game and on players. I think there's always room for a three-man booth there. And I would think in baseball, perhaps, too, although I don't know the mechanics of baseball well because I've not done much of it. And so I really probably shouldn't comment on that. In football, I think there is room, but when you get a two-man booth with a strong analyst, I think that's a pretty perfect scenario. Yeah. I think you can do so much with what he knows, and then ask a follow-up question and have his fingerprints all over that broadcast. I like the way it is set up right now in the NFL. A sideline reporter is always good too, and that can be kind of the quasi third member of the crew. But yeah. But I think two in the booth is pretty good.
It's funny, you just mentioned you haven't done much baseball. Have you ever called an MLB game?
You know, I had a chance to go do the baseball Cardinals when I was doing University of Missouri back in the late 80s and was called into St. Louis. Jack Buck got a hold of me. He had me come in. He said, hey, we're going to have an opening kid for the third part of our Camel X radio crew. Can you come in and do a couple innings on tape for him? I said, sure. I mean, what an honor. Jack Buck calling, and I was doing, like I said, University of Missouri basketball and football at the time, and they were hurt on Camel X in St. Louis, and so I drove into St. Louis from our home in Kansas City, did about four innings in a booth along the first baseline, gave the tape to Jack Buck, and then drove home in the ninth and listened to him do the ninth inning, and Got back to Kansas City about 2 in the morning. Phone rang at 7 o'clock the next morning, and Jack had listened to the innings and said, hey, kid, we got to get you back in here because Bob Hyland wants to talk to you. So I drove back into St. Louis a couple of days later and thought very seriously about doing it. My dad, ironically enough, was with the baseball Cardinals as the media relations director back in the late 60s. And I had spent 5 years in St. Louis as a kid and would be in the clubhouse on Sunday afternoons, went to spring training in St. Petersburg at Al Lang Field when my dad was with the team. And so knew the organization, certainly knew Jack Buck, and what an honor it would be to be on that broadcast. But it really didn't fit our family at that time. We were just beginning our family. I was still doing the Kansas City Chiefs. I was doing the University of Missouri and really enjoyed that. Baseball would have been a life-changing experience for our family, I think, in terms of our schedule and things we wanted to do. So it didn't really work out. But I was honored that they considered me for that job, and will never forget my little two-week stint there when I went in and met Jack, and he called and met the man that ran Camel X and the Cardinal Network, and that was pretty impressive and something I'll never forget.
Did you call in those four innings you did? Did you get to call a home run?
I don't recall, Jimmy. I don't think I did. I'm not sure that I did.
Because I would think you'd have a great home run call with your voice.
You're nice to say that. I don't recall one, and I don't even know who they played. I just know that there was an engineer in the back of the booth, and he ran the tape recorder. I had a headset, and they had a kind of an old fashioned reel to reel recorder going, and they taped it, and that was about it. I'd not done much baseball. I did a little bit at the University of Kansas when I was a student there. Some of my heroes in broadcasting were Harwell and Scully and Buck and all these great broadcasters that I think we associate with early broadcasting because baseball is so prominent on radio, and Bob Prince in Pittsburgh. I mean, the name Milo Hamilton, the name goes on and on and on. And I listened to a lot of those guys at the tail end of their careers. But no, I don't think there was a home run call.
I want you to do.
I probably wouldn't have gotten the call back. Perhaps if there was, and they heard it.
I know you're on TNT and CBS. They don't have MLB. But if you can ever hook up with a network that has MLB, I would love to hear you do a baseball game and hear the home run call. I think you'd have a good one with that voice.
Well, you're very kind. That'd be kind of fun to do. Maybe in a bucket list type thing, like call a Kentucky Derby or call a home run in a major league game. That'd be kind of fun.
Guys, today's episode of the SI Media Podcast is brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. There's a new boss in town at Buffalo Wild Wings, and he deals in bacon. It's the Bacon Boss Burger, featuring bacon three different ways and a blanket of white cheese sauce. And he's joined by other new favorites, like the Smothered Cheesesteak Quesadilla, Sweet Chili Shrimp, and Alaska Cod Classic. They all pair perfectly with the Sam 76, a fruity ale with the crisp finish of a lager. Hurry in today and try them all before they're gone at Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports, available for a limited time while supplies last. And please make sure you drink responsibly. This is Kevin Harlan on the SI Media Podcast right now with your host, Jimmy Traina. A couple of just fun, lighthearted, quick-fire questions here since you've been doing this.
Sure.
For so long, so many sports. What's your favorite place to call it? Where's your favorite place to call a game?
Well, I enjoy Lambeau Field a great deal. For football, that's always it just has so much history. I don't mind Soldier Field because of the history there. Madison Square Garden for basketball certainly is hard to beat. A lot of the new arenas are special, but maybe don't have yet the history that you have full appreciation. You can completely find them as compelling, say, as one of the older arenas or ballparks. A lot of them are alike. A lot of times it's the people that are there that you look forward to more than the actual venue. The arenas are all pretty much cookie cutter now, which is kind of too bad. But when I first got in the NBA back in the early 80s, before the Garden had really become what it is now in terms of how nice, and they've renovated so much of it. But Boston Garden was a great place to do a game, and I can remember going in there. The Spectrum in Philadelphia was a fun place to go because of the history there. So So I guess you're sensing that the older ballpark,
yeah,
older stadiums, to me, always kind of held a special place.
Give me, in each sport, NFL, let's do NFL, NBA, loudest buildings you've ever called a game in.
Wow. There are a lot of NBA places that are loud. I will tell you that. The loudest, Golden State probably is, and I've just been there a couple times during the last 3 weeks doing games, and perhaps that's why I say it, but even if I step back and reflect even more, I would say that that place is about as loud as any. Cleveland, when LeBron is cooking, becomes a pretty significant eardrum buzzer. It'll linger into the next day, and that's a pretty good way to gauge how much impact it has. There have been some college arenas which are good. We only do about 6 or 7 games on campus, and they're during the regular season. Then the tournament, you know, is in the neutral site,
right.
So a lot of times you don't have the full-throated fan feel you get in some of these other places. But I guess I point to the NBA places that have the most noise, and Golden State probably stands out as much as any.
Give me, I mean, you've probably worked with hundreds of analysts over the years. Give me 2 or 3 analysts you've never worked with that you've loved to work with, that you would love to work with.
Well, I think Chris Collinsworth would be a fascinating guy because I think he lives and breathes the NFL. Gruden would have been fun to be around. I think he has, I think his intensity would come across in terms of NFL people. I think all of us wish we would have had a chance to be around John Madden more when he was at the very top of his game. Madden, you know, just gave so much to the sport and changed that position and really made it even more of a celebrity type seat than they had before. I think he was probably as revered an analyst as we've known, certainly as well known. I'm sure I'm forgetting some people right now, but those guys kind of stand out. I've worked with some great ones and some real enjoyable people. Basketball, really, I think working with Bill Rafter, I worked with Billy Packer a couple times. I'm just thinking of the bigger, I've not worked with Vitale, and I think that would be fun. And I've worked with Rafter. I think when you've worked with Bill, you may have made that just a one-person sentence because of what he is like, the kind of person he is, how well he treats you, how much it feels like your friends, even if you haven't spent a great deal of time together. We can sit down and do a game and not see each or talk to each other in 10 months. And it feels like I saw him just prior to that, and we've been, you know, conversing and talking and had dinner the night before, and our families have been together. It's so easy. It's a running conversation during the game, which makes games with him so incredibly special. So I don't want to not talk about any of the people I currently work with or have worked with in the recent past, but those guys, you know, are kind of the very top of our business, and I think I speak for anybody in my position. We'd all like to work with those guys.
Do you have a fun, maybe late night story you can tell about Bill Rafter? I feel like everyone in the business has one of those.
Well, we did a game in Madison, and I have gone to countless dinners, not maybe as much as some other broadcasters have that are more of his regular partners. Certainly in his NBA days, he had a lot of people that he traveled with, and they did a lot of games together. But we did a game, Michigan State at Wisconsin, late in the college basketball season this year, and he and I went to dinner with my wife, who made the trip to Madison, and our producer and our director, Mark Wolf Bob Fishman. And we went to a supper club in downtown Madison that had been recommended, and it was like the old-fashioned Wisconsin supper club, which has, you know, wood paneling, dark lighting, deep rich woods and thick carpet and candlelight and just really kind of that old time Wisconsin supper club feel. And it wasn't as much that there was anything special about the night. It was one of the few times my wife has gone with me and we went to dinner with Bill, who she has known for 20 plus years in previous times we've gone out or done things. But I was reminded when we got back to our hotel room after spending 3 hours at dinner with Bill and our crew, that just how fun he is to be around. Well, my wife just could not stop talking about, did you hear Bill say that? What about when Bill did this? And he's always smiling. And I guess I just really, you don't take it for granted, but you're around it so much, I think you just come to expect that walking in that it's going to be that kind of night. But for someone that doesn't do it as frequently, say, as I do, and I work with Bill three, four times a year, it becomes kind of this real special experience. And she had probably not gone out to dinner with us or gone out with Bill for 5, 6, 7 years. So it was fun to see her enjoyment and talk about things that he had said during dinner. And he's just a hoot. I mean, the guy is, as you know, I mean, he's just the best. And that's the business. It's a great business. It's a great, there are challenges certainly. And there are times when you're down and there are times when you're sky high. And if you can always find that middle ground, you're great. But it's not just the business, but it's the people in the business. And I think when you have a full appreciation for the business and the people in it, you've really kind of hit the sweet spot. If you know what the business is and you know the challenges that are there and you have a feel and you have some momentum and you know what you need to do and are comfortable in that setting and then can be surrounded by people that you would genuinely call friends, that to me, I mean, I just don't know how it gets any better. And that's kind of what it's like to be with guys like Bill Raftery.
You led me right into one of the questions I wanted to ask you, which was what kind of relationship you have with Marv Albert and Mike Breen. Obviously, those are the top two guys for their respective networks. Breen calls the NBA Finals for ABC. Marv gets the Western Conference Finals this year for TNT. And I'm just curious, go to them. I mean, you've been doing this so long, but do you have a relationship where you talk to them regularly? Is it a kind of a fraternity, or you're all doing your own gigs and you don't get to fraternize that much?
Mike and I are basically the same age, and so we've known each other for a long, long time, and we text frequently. He texted me the other night, and I was doing a game in San Antonio, and I was waiting for a message from my wife on something at home. And so I, one of the rare times I've had the phone kind of off to the side, but certainly within view, if during a break I could text her back, and Mike could text. He goes, "Hey, nice pocket square tonight." And so about a quarter later, we were reading a promo for a game I knew Mike was going to do on ABC. And I said, "Mike Breen will be wearing the pocket square. He'll be broadcasting for ABC here on Sunday," and so it was, and then he texts back that he enjoyed the comment. So Mike and I go back and forth, and we've got this ongoing dinner reservation with our wives and us someplace, and we can ever cross in the same city. So Mike is just a special friend, one of the kindest people in this business. It's an honor to be his friend. It really is. And then Marv is this larger than life person in our business who, I don't know if any of us will ever get to the level he has been at. He is, in terms of what he's accomplished, how decorated he is. He is truly kind of like Scully in baseball. I mean, he is the voice of pro basketball, and I think will forever be known that way. And we may have another 10 Mike Breens or whoever go through, and they still may not. And Mike will say this as well. I mean, that's who Mike grew up listening to.
Yep.
And he's just one of those guys that is just like he's like a living legend. And so he'll text everyone. So when I won an award a couple of months ago, and he was one of the first people to text me. And when I went to Fox back in 1994 doing the Chiefs on local radio, he gave my name, unbeknownst to me, he gave my name to the folks Ed Gorin and David Hill at Fox, mm-hmm. who were just beginning their NFL march up and ramp up. They had hired Summerall, they had hired Stockton, and they were looking for some younger guys, and Marv gave them my name. And because of that, and Steve Sable, the late great Steve Sable at NFL Films, giving my name as well, they hired me, along with Joe Buck and Kenny Albert and Tom Brenneman. We were the four younger guys to supplement these two great broadcasters in Summerall and Stockton.
Right.
So Marv has been a part of my career at different stages and very impactful. Now, I wouldn't say that we text or visit more than a handful of times a year, but he has been incredibly gracious and so wonderful to me in my career. I hope I can pass it on to someone younger and return the favor. He is He's been a very good friend of my career, and I really, really, I'm most grateful for that. I really appreciate that.
Can't get a better recommendation for a play-by-play job than Marv Albert, especially as, you know.
Oh, I know. Isn't that something? Yeah, that's when that happened, I just about go, you got to be kidding me.
Well, those people can't say no if he's the one doing the recommendation.
There. I mean, isn't that the truth? I mean, like, right, they had to hire. It was like, yeah. They're it was out of the blue, and I was doing NBA stuff, but you never know how many guys, especially that time. This was back in, like I said, 1993-94, the end of the 93 season, end of the 94 NFL playoffs, and I remember walking across doing the championship game for the Chiefs, and Carl Peterson, who was then the general manager of the Chiefs, and Steve Sabre were walking across the field toward me on a windy day. I just finished doing a pregame show with Marty Schottenheimer, walking across the field back up to our booth in Buffalo, when Montana was a quarterback in the Chiefs, and they were going to play Jim Kelly in the Buffalo Bills in the AFC Championship game. And Carl, who's my boss and the president of the Chiefs, is pointing at me as we're getting closer, walking and going to meet it at about the 50-yard line. And Steve Sabre is raising his arms, and I said hello. We exchanged pleasantries, and Steve Sabre said, Fox just called me in the last couple of weeks, asked me for the three guys I'd recommend doing local NFL radio play-by-play, and your name was one of the three. And I said, you've got to be kidding me. I said a couple of weeks ago, Marv Albert told me that he had given my name to him too. So, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that a young broadcaster can only pray for. Like, how could the confluence of those two guys suggest it? You know, I mean, right. I mean, blessed beyond all measure when so lucky, so fortunate, but they did. And then that's how I ended up at Fox, which obviously led to my time at CBS.
Is there a trend in broadcasting that you wish would stop or go away? What's something you see broadcasters do that makes you cringe?
Well, I think that, I don't know that I can really say it. I think the principles are still there for a play-by-play guy. I do think that management, and this goes for all of them, because you read it, you hear it from all different sectors of our business. They want more personality. They want more. They want people to laugh. They want people. They want to hear you laugh. Right. They want the lighter side to come out and personality to show and make something stand out about that broadcast. And have people, I guess their feeling is, which makes sense, that when they're watching and they're in the comfort of their own home or wherever and they're listening, say, oh, these guys like each other. They're having a good time. And that becomes a pretty significant point that is relayed to us from all the people I work with. And I think it probably is the same at the other networks, that maybe before the play-by-play guy was looked at, be a reporter, call the game, get the distance, tell me the tackler, you know, more nuts and bolts. I think now they're looking for a little bit more personality. They want some laughing. They want people to feel like you're a team, like you're friends. And I guess that's not troubling. It's just kind of a new push into this. And the other thing is social media. Yep. They want us to shoot, picture, tweet, do as much as we can to the social side in promoting our game, promoting our product, and what our network is doing. And a lot of times we'll receive something from the company office at all the different places I work. And we'll say, would you mind tweeting this out? It'll help us with our weekend. It'll help with our game tonight. It'll help with whatever. And we do it. And that's part of the business now, which I know that maybe some of the guys that have been in longer than I have kind of scratch their head about, but I've got four kids and I watch my kids on social media, so I know exactly what they're talking about. That's what they're gravitating. Like the NBA audience is a young audience.
Yep.
They are a young audience, and they are, I think they're half listening and half texting and half trying to come up with something. And that becomes, you know, kind of where the business is going, and certainly where it is now.
And the NBA dominates on social media compared to the other sports.
Oh my goodness.
It's interesting to hear you say this, because I was surprised in doing a little research on this when you the clip that went viral where you called the streaker at the Niners game, which, I mean, people like me who, you know, post the fun lighter side of sports for a living, had a field day with, and we thought it was one of the greatest clips of all time. I know you said you regretted it afterwards, and I'm now wondering, now you're even more removed from it. I would hope you don't regret it still, but I'm just curious. I know you said you did regret it, but looking back, it really was a fun, lighthearted thing. Now, even further removed from it, where do you stand on that?
Well, I'm fine with it. I have talked, and my wife will talk me off the ledge when things like this happen. We're all so incredibly sensitive. What I regretted, Jimmy, and I don't know if I had told you this in the past, I may have told Richard this when we visited last time, is that the NFL and really anybody in our position should never try, and kind of an unspoken thing, don't show the drunk who comes out on the field or the streaker or whatever that disrupts the game. The cameras aren't going to show it, and so you shouldn't talk about it. Now, had I been doing that for CBS television or even TNT, I wouldn't have. Our cameras would not have shown the person on the court or the field, and I would have said, someone has come out in the field, they're going to clear them off, we're going to resume play here in just a second. We'd have gotten onto something else,
right,
and been very much like that. But on radio, you're so geared into literally describing everything from the moon rising above the edge of the stadium to the wind direction to the lights and the shadows they're casting or the sun is casting onto the field. I mean, you're just trying to paint as complete a picture.
Yeah.
And the game, as you may recall, was incredibly boring, and the kid runs out. He runs right through the formation. The two teams are lined up ready to snap the ball, and he runs right by the slot receiver, and he's like, and then the other thing is he ran around for like 40 seconds and no one did anything. I mean, like, he's running around like, right, like a crazy man, and, yeah, and no one did anything. And so I called it as I saw it, and just kind of, I was working with Kurt Warner, just trying to keep it a little bit loose. And the kid was funny, and it looked like it was nothing nefarious. And so he didn't mean any harm to anyone. And he was finally tackled and brought off and arrested and whatever. And that was that. But I was worried that the league, which is very, very conscious about this stuff. And I've been in the league a long time. My dad was in the league a long time. I know it. I get it. I get it. You don't want to promote that. But it was on radio, and they couldn't see it. And I think there is a connection with that as opposed to maybe talking about it or hearing it like I was doing it. The other thing which saved me, too, is my boss, Howard Denaroff, was right next to me. And I think he was okay with it. But I had a couple anxious moments there. I got to be honest.
Well,
the Dan Patrick Show called as I took a red eye home. The Dan Patrick Show called as they were signing off, and the producer says, "Hey, can you come on?" I go, "Yeah, what's wrong?" "I don't want to talk about the guy last night." I go, "Yeah. Is there a problem?" He goes, No. Dan loved it. He wants to talk about it. Because I had not been in communication, but the game ended
right,
like at 1 o'clock in the morning East Coast time, and so all my friends were sleeping, and they were not around. So I just didn't know what the reaction was.
Yeah, and then us East Coasters made a big deal out of it first thing in the morning.
I'm sorry, our phone cut out.
I said, and then us East Coasters made a big thing out of it first thing in the morning.
I guess they did. Yeah, and Boomer had told me that they did on their show as well.
Here's what I would tell you about that, though. Two things. I know the league has this stance about, like, let's not promote that. My thing on that is, whether you promote it or not, if someone's stupid enough to do that, even after you're quote unquote promoting it, they're going to jail. Whether someone's doing play by play or showing them, they're going to jail. So if they're stupid enough to do it, that's not anyone else's fault. And the second thing I would say is this: I know the networks; they have a big thing about, they make a big thing about, we're not going to show it. We're not going to show it. Well, guess what? There's this thing now called social media, and everyone in the stadium's taking pictures and putting it all over Twitter. So you can get off your high horse about not showing it. We're going to see it anyway.
they're going to do it. And I guess they just don't want to make it like an epidemic where everybody wants to get on TV and they're going to show it. So I get all that. And I just would not want to. I wouldn't want to hurt the relationship of the company I was working with in that particular event in the league. And you're just worried about stuff like, maybe overly so, but that's pretty important stuff. But even the league, the NFL.com had done something, so I knew when they put it on their website, it would not have gone on there without the approval of the league itself. So I think that's when I breathed a sigh of relief and it was fine. And now here we are 2 years or whatever afterwards, and you and I are talking about it, and I respect you. So it was fine. I don't think I'll do it again, but I think it was great.
Well, the internet would have revolted if you got in trouble for that. I can tell you that. So last thing before we wrap, your daughter, you mentioned your kids, your daughter Olivia, and you mentioned social media. She works for ESPN. That's got to be a huge thrill to see her on television for you and see her growing in her role at ESPN.
It is, Jimmy. I'm incredibly proud of her. She's worked hard. She went to the University of Georgia. And I told her not to get in the business. I said, it is going to be, it's difficult for anybody to get in the business. I think for a woman, it's even more difficult. And I said, there's not going to be an easy path. And, you know, you've got your challenges ahead of you. And she was very well aware, her eyes were wide open, went to the University of Georgia, did all the things that I was hopeful she would do. She did all the editing. She stayed up late at night working on pieces. She was there early for practices. She did her due diligence and reporting. She learned how to do all the things that kids learn how to do in journalism school and got that degree, graduated a semester early. In fact, she was doing, going into her senior year, she was hired by Fox Sports to do sideline when they still had a portion of the Southeastern Conference football package. So right. She would go to school, she'd drive to the Atlanta airport, she'd fly to her game, she'd go to the coaches' meetings, she would spend the night Friday in the hotel, she'd do the game Saturday, get back to Atlanta on Saturday night, drive back into Athens, and go to school on Monday. And I thought, this is like a fairy tale. I mean, this is like unbelievable. She was going in there to interview for maybe an internship, and they hired her to be the sideline reporter on the SEC games they were calling, and that led to the Atlanta Hawks and the NBA, and she was doing the NBA at 21, hired by ESPN shortly after that. She's now going into her fourth year at ESPN. She just turned 25, and she's been doing football, and she's doing some college basketball now, and I just told her, it's a process. I said, you began with so much so early, so young. I said, don't get impatient. Just let this happen naturally. You need to mature as a on-air broadcaster and continue to work on your craft, and they'll watch that. And these are smart people there. They know when it's time to move you up or around or whatever. But the good sign is they still want you back every year. And that is, you cannot ask for a better validation than that.
Yeah, so she's
I told her two things. I said, don't get into broadcasting and never date a professional athlete. So what does she do? She gets into broadcasting, and she's engaged to a professional athlete, and she'll be getting married here in a couple months.
Who, by the way, yeah. Sam Decker, is very funny on Twitter. I enjoy following him on Twitter. He's a good follow. And I was gonna say, if I was your daughter or even Sam, I would ask you to be doing the introductions at the wedding for the wedding party. Have they asked you to do that? Because they really should.
I think I'll just give my toast, and that night I'll just revel in being a dad. I'm pretty proud of her, and it'll be our second marriage here in 3 years, and so we're pretty excited about that. We have three girls and a son, and two of our girls getting married has been a real, real joy for my wife Ann and I to watch and be a part of.
I know the father-in-law, son-in-law relationship can maybe sometimes be a little dicey, but if I was Sam Decker, I would say, Dad, can you do the introduction? I mean, you're Kevin Harlan. You've got that voice. Call the wedding party.
I'll pass that on to you.
I appreciate it. All right, well, I thank you so much for coming on and for your time. I really enjoyed chatting, and good luck. Enjoy the rest of the playoffs. Hopefully you get some better games.
I hope we do too, Jimmy. Thanks. Enjoy reading you, first of all, and now being a part of what is a terrific group of people you've had on your podcast. I download them every week and learn something every time I listen. So it was real special to be on with you. Thank you so much for inviting me.
I appreciate that. Very nice of you to say. Thank you. Take care.
Take care, Jimmy.
My thanks to Kevin Harlan. Before we get to Andrew Marchand and Neil Best to talk about Mike Francesa, let me tell you that today's episode of the SI Media Podcast is also brought to you by Away. Away was founded by two friends from New York who found themselves at JFK with dead phones, delayed flights, and a bright idea. Luggage with power. Thus, the Away carry-on was born. It really is the perfect luggage, inspired by true travel stories. We asked thousands of people how they pack, why they travel, and what bugs them most about their luggage. Then we designed a bag that solved a few old problems, like sticky wheels, and a few of the new ones, like dead cell phones, which is a big problem. Away uses high-quality materials while offering a much lower price compared to other brands by cutting out the middleman and selling directly to you. You can choose from a variety of colors and four sizes. They've got the carry-on, the bigger carry-on, the medium, or the large for your longer stays. All suitcases are made with premium German polycarbonate, unrivaled in strength and impact resistance, also very lightweight, which is important. The interior features a patent-pending compression system, helpful for overpackers. I'm not one of them, but if you are, that's good for you. Four of the 360-degree spinner wheels guarantee a smooth ride. TSA-approved combination lock built into the top of the bag to prevent theft, and a removable, washable laundry bag to keep dirty clothes separate from the clean. Both sizes of the carry-on are able to charge all cell phones, tablets, e-readers, and anything else that's powered by a USB cord. A single charge of the Away carry-on will charge your iPhone 5 times. And an added bonus, there's a lifetime warranty, so if anything breaks, they'll fix it or replace it for you for life. Away also offers a 100-day trial. Live with it, vibe with it, travel with it, Instagram it. If at any point you decide it's not for you, return it for a full refund, no questions asked. Free shipping on any Away order within the lower 48 states. Away's carry-on sizes are compliant with all major U.S. airlines, and you can maximize the amount you can pack. If you're in town, please be sure to visit Away at their retail store right here in New York City. The suitcase charges my cell phone, and I don't have to worry about the dead phone while traveling. So you can check Twitter constantly, Instagram constantly, listen to the SI Media podcast, and the suitcase travels the phone for you. It's sleek, ultra durable. Interior design helps keep my items neat, organized, very easy to carry up and down stairs, which is a pain in the neck because it's very light. So it's a great, great suitcase. The special offer to listeners is coming up right here, $20 off a suitcase. SI Media Podcast listeners get $20 off a suitcase. All you have to do is go to awaytravel.com/SI Media. Use a promo code SI Media during checkout. It's that simple. So again, $20 off a suitcase by visiting awaytravel.com/SI Media using the promo code SI Media when you check out. All right, monster day in New York City. Mike Francesa coming back to WFAN. I have two of the three New York sports media. Every New York sports media reporter played a part in the story. I'll break it down for you quickly. Monday, Andrew Marchand of the New York Post, who's now a regular on the SI Media podcast, thank God. People are crying for him to come back on today. He says Mike Francesa, quote, desperately wants to come back to FAN. All hell breaks loose. 7 o'clock this morning, Neil Best of Newsday, also on the line, breaks the story, gets a quote from Francesa. It's time for me to go back to FAN. Of course, it's only been 4 months, but it's time. And then Bob Raisman of the Daily News, who's not on this podcast because I can't even navigate two people at once, so I'm not going to do three, breaks the story. Francesa's coming back Monday through Friday, 3 to 7. So let's start with Andrew first, since he had the first thing on Monday. You spoke to Mike, but he wouldn't really give you anything. I want from both of you, Andrew first, then Neil. Tell me, when you spoke to Mike, his tone, was he salty? I mean, he's always salty, but what was the vibe you got from him? Is he excited about this? Does he know there's going to be a shitstorm coming his way? Give me the Mike vibe.
Well, first off, I think Neil has a more special relationship with Mike than I do. So his vibe towards me,
Neil,
might have been
listen,
a little different.
Neil is the Mike whisperer, but you're breaking every other story, so you got to give him something.
So, well, here's the thing. So when I call Mike up, it's a little more like he comes on and he's like, "What do you want?" I don't know. Maybe that's what you get too, Neil, but that's what I've gotten.
I got that.
So basically, I called him up. I told him what I was reporting. I already had the story ready to go, so I just kind of needed him. Actually, we ended up, I called him, and then he didn't pick up, so we posted the story, and then he called me back. Anyway, so he already knew that the headline said he was desperate to get back into New York radio, and FAN was a possibility. And so he's going on and on, and, you know, it's about a five-minute conversation, and he said, "Are you going to ask me questions?" And he was going on, so I said, "Well, I was trying not to interrupt you," because he was talking. And so then I asked him, I know, which is slightly ironic.
Yes.
And so I asked him, "Are you going back to WFAN?" And Mike Francesa paused and then said, "I'm not talking about any specific stations." So at that point, I kind of knew that he was going back, but, you know, as Neil will probably attest to, when you're reporting these type of things, you want to have it 100%, of course. And so, you know, I put a little hedge in there, but I was pretty confident that he was going back.
All right, Neil?
That's what happened on my end.
Okay.
Well, I got to be honest. If in my case, it was more of a statement than an interview, and he said what he wanted to say. I was like, well, Mike, you know, there's about 37, you know, there's a lot of follow-up questions here, and he just wouldn't. He would not answer any follow-up questions. I'm like, well, there's a lot of stuff in here, you know. I was like, no, that's it. So it was not emotional or really, it's a statement. So I'm like, you know, of course I had to use it, but I'm leaving thinking, you know, not much of myself as a journalist, because I'm like, yeah, there's a lot of holes in this story.
Can you really can't question a Pope when he gives you a statement?
Well, I mean, now, I gotta ask questions and do my job, but right. I guess I can't force a guy to answer them.
The main question is this campaign to keep him away from FAN that he mentioned. Now, this is what I wrote on SI.com today. If there is a campaign from the station to keep him out, the details of that eventually come out because FAN leaks everything. Everyone there leaks everything. But there's also the possibility that he made that up because he wants to soften the blow about him coming back. The thoughts from you gentlemen on that. We'll go to Andrew first.
Yeah, there's no campaign to keep him out. I mean, is he liked at WFAN? No. I don't know. There's some people probably who like him, but the majority do not like him. He's a difficult guy to be around. He's egotistical. And they're happy when he left. And then now, just recently, when he was on with Chris Russo on the Hot Stove Show on MLB Network, they were saying, you know, who's going to be gone next? And they're having a little fun in their eyes with FAN. And Boomer Esiason called them classless. So that's what he's coming into. But to say that there was some sort of campaign, I think a lot of these people were shocked. This happened in the last week or so, less than that. It's been a very short time before our story yesterday, or on Monday, for podcast purposes. But ultimately, he's not liked, but there's no campaign against him. And also he said in Neil's piece is that you know, he's doing it because people didn't want him to do it. So let's just say that's true. So
right, that's right. He should be in therapy because that's psychotic.
Exactly. It's 64 years old, multi-millionaire family, and you are going to go work every day despite some imaginary people.
Right.
Give me a break.
You need to get on Dr. Phil. Neil, you're the campaign. What do you know about the campaign?
Well, I don't know anything about a campaign, and that, because that was one of the things Mike wouldn't tell me what he's talking about. I mean, the only thing I do know, I don't know that he has any specific person in mind. I do know that he and Chris Carlin have a very unpleasant relationship and have for years, and that, you know, Chris has said on the air that after that appearance with Russo on High Heat, you know, Chris texted both of them to explain in graphic terms how he did not appreciate that. So I know that Mike and Chris Carlin have bad blood, and maybe that's part of what Mike's talking about. I don't know. But as far as the campaign to keep him out, no, at some point I hope Mike explains to me what that's about, but I am not aware of the campaign at this time.
I think you're going to hear more about the Chris Carlin text and Mike's reaction to that text. I think there's going to be a lot more to that to come out. Do either of you know, in both of your, in Andrew's story on Monday, you wrote that he wanted to get back, desperately wanted to get back to New York radio, and you mentioned WOR and ESPN. Did he ever even have talks with those stations?
He did.
Okay.
He had talks with both of them. Now, ESPN had no interest in him replacing Michael Kay. He tried to get them to take his Sunday show for the fall. And then WOR, I mean, there was a lot of, you know, they have Limbaugh and Hannity in the afternoons, and so there, I could go into it. It's pretty complicated how it potentially could work. I don't know how far down, so I don't want to say that on your much-listened-to podcast and cause the whole thing, because there's a lot of big names involved with that.
Please.
I don't know how far down the line had gone, but no, because it's just too much, too speculative. I'll save it for the post if I ever wrote it, but basically it didn't happen, but he did have talks, and I think those may have helped him with FAN.
Well, I think to Andrew's point, you know, if you want to be on New York Sports Talk Radio, there's just not a lot of options. When this thing first started, a lot of us were thinking, you know, podcasts, what it was, something national. What, there's a lot of things you can do these days, just like what you're doing right now. But if you want to be on a daily basis on New York Sports Talk Radio, like, where are you going to go?
So, and I think,
yeah.
As I think, listen, he had a 19-month retirement tour, and then he left in December, and it was April 1st, and he still had no gig. Andrew and I talked about this last week. So even if what the campaign, the text by car, whatever it was, I think in the back of his head, he always wanted to come back, and I think the retirement tour got so out of control, he couldn't say he was staying because they had things planned.
Jimmy, there's a hole in your story.
Go ahead.
There's a hole in your story. When Carden got arrested,
he wanted a raise.
He had a chance to come back. He asked for more money. Right. They said no, and he could have come back then.
Right.
And that moment was his out in terms of doing it while saving face. He could have just said, "I'm coming back to help the station," and everybody would have been like, "Oh, okay, that makes sense."
So why do you guys? Fine. So why do you guys think he didn't at that time?
Because the money wasn't
right, and he said in an interview we did for the video we did about him he said we had one meeting and basically admitted that he didn't feel the passion or the urgency from the other side, so it didn't go anywhere.
Ah.
So
he wanted
to be
wanted.
There was some money, I guess, but that was if he wanted to reverse course, that was his opportunity to do so without dealing with the kind of blowback he's going to deal with now.
Would it be too?
Yeah, I'll chime in real quick.
Go ahead.
He has the ego the size of Alaska.
So do you think he was waiting for the ratings to come out where Kay beat his replacement show and then he can come in and ride the horse to save the station?
No, there's no plan.
Right.
Neil, I know you took the statement down. There's no plan. He went home. He did this thing. He said this dumb thing to Katie Nolan a couple years ago. He said he was going to retire. Then he played it all out. He kept saying, I'm going to retire. He could have at any point said, "Nah, you know what? Never mind. I'm not going to retire." Instead, he did the whole retirement tour for 19 months. Then he comes in. He realizes on January 1, you know, December 15th, he's done, has a regular vacation, comes on the next year. He's got nothing. They talk to the Athletic. He talked to other places. Nobody's interested in him, the money that he wants, or the visibility that he wants. And he brings in CAA. He hadn't had an agent for 10 years. Brings in CAA. He has nothing. He can't figure out what to do, and so he turns to FAN and retreats and figures out that, you know what, this is what I really want to do. And you know what, I think it's actually going to work out maybe for Carlin, Baggy, and Bart. I have my reasons for thinking it might be better for them in the long run, but I mean, it's a terrible thing to do. It's not cool, you know, to ruin, you know, Bart obviously is set, you know, money wise. But the other two, you know, they're younger people who have,
I'm friends with Carlin and Maggie. I just saw Maggie. But I would say this, and I'm not disagreeing, but I think the most of the blame should be put on FAN, not Francesa.
Well, right. I mean, Francesa can have interest in coming back. That doesn't mean FAN has to take him.
Exactly.
So,
okay. I mean, well, but Mike doesn't have to go and take these guys.
Yeah, but FAN's the one that's allowing it. Allowing it. FAN could have said to Mike.
They want him back. At the highest level, they want him back. And so that's why he's back.
Right.
And so
they could have said to
Right, listen, I don't necessarily begrudge Mike. I mean, in some regards, because you know what? There aren't that many opportunities. ESPN's not going to do it. And so where can he come back? This is the place he can come back. You asked the question of like you know, acting as if it was like a plan. There's no plan. I mean, he thought he had a plan. He talked about 19 months of April 1st. He had nothing.
Do I think it was a plan? No. Do I think in the back of his head he always thought to himself, well, I could always go back to FAN? Yes. I mean, I did. I left SI, I went to Fox, and in the back of my head I said, oh, I could always go back to SI. And I think he always had that in the back of his head. And then I think he saw the ratings, Carlin, then he got in this fight with Carlin, and, you know, he decided to order the code red.
Well, obviously, if the new show had demolished Kay in the ratings, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Right.
You know, during their ridiculously high road opening of their show today, I mean, Chris pointed out, you know, it's a business, which of course is true. These guys are running a business. They want to do what's best for the business. So I might not look, and I might not be cool, but they're making a business decision. And, you know, that I guess you got to give Maggie and Chris especially credit for the high road they took, but I thought it was, I mean, nobody would have begrudged them expressing a little bit of bitterness even then and saying something like, hey, we're pros, we're going to keep doing our thing. And it would have been fine if they expressed a little bit of unhappiness. But, you know, they chose an extremely high road today, which, you know, I guess that's good for them.
Andrew, did you listen to the opening? What were your thoughts?
I did. Yeah, they did. You know, Tuesday is what you want to say, right? Right, Jimmy?
I don't care. It's a podcast. People know. I'm sorry.
I'm new to the podcast.
It's okay, Neil. Don't worry. Andrew's way more professional than me. Listen, people click down. The only people listening to this are the diehard Francesa fans. They don't care what day you say. And if we're going to really do this in the true honor of Mike and the Mad Dog, it would be Tuesday, not Tuesday.
We also should be, well, given that this is evolving, we have to do this every day now for the next month, probably.
Probably.
don't say that, Neil. Trust me, he'll just call you up and put on Twitter that you're coming on.
Come on, Andrew.
You have, like, no choice.
I, Andrew, last week when I had you on, I said, are you working on anything big? And you played it coy, and I said, you are. So, you know.
Yeah, but that was...
That was Brett Favre?
Story.
It
was the Favre and something else.
Whether it's Bill Parcells or Brett Favre or Jimmy Traina, I mean, this does happen in the world. People leave and come back and unretire. And, I mean, and it's awkward, but after a week or so on the air, people get used to the idea.
But, Neil, I'm glad you said that, because I do think in a month no one's going to care about all this, everything that's gone on in the last couple of days. But this is different than someone leaving and coming back. I mean, he was leaving for 19 months.
I know.
And the way he's coming back is bizarre. And I think FAN had all the power here. They could have said to Mike, all right, Mike, you want to come back? You got to do 10 to 1. And I've heard from multiple sources he's going to be doing a lot of shows from home. They built a studio in his house, right, which is ironic because he's going to be doing his show from home. And meanwhile, at the studio, they have the Mike Francesa Studios. Can't make it up.
I mean, look, I'm very old and have seen just about everything, but I'd be lying if I said this entire episode is not shocking and bizarre. I mean, of course it is. But if you're me or Andrew or any kind of journalist or you or a listener, I mean, it's great entertainment value.
Okay, I'm going to go to Andrew first on this. You think this can be a positive for Carl and Maggie and Bart? I actually do too, because the pressure to go into that time slot was ridiculous. But you got those three, Russo, Kay. Who's the biggest loser in this whole thing with Mike coming back?
Mike,
okay.
I'd say Mike is long-term biggest loser of this I gets to do a show. How does this end? How does this end well? Doesn't. I don't see how it does. You know, like, is he going to retire again at some point? I mean, again, that's the long game. Short game, you know, Mike's a winner here. I think Kay's a big winner because he gets another shot at the king. And if he can take him down, that's a huge thing for that show and for that station and a goal that they've had for a long, long time. So I think he's a winner. Russo, I think he's a draw there because I don't really think he looks a little bit better in terms of how he's handled things, but I don't think it really impacts Russo. And then, like I said, with CMB, I just think a lesser time slot, though, you might get a chance to get their footing under each other. They do seem to really sincerely like each other, and I do think they will come across as likable, especially in comparison to Mike, who does have a legion of fans who like him a lot, don't get me wrong, but that could potentially help that trio going forward.
I'm going to get you out of here after one more question, but Neil, tell me what you think about, give me what this means for Kay, CMB, Russo. I think the Russo thing's interesting in that maybe they could have done a 1 or 2 day a week thing, but go ahead, Neil.
Well, I mean, the Russo, I don't know. I mean, there were some brief talks about the series, them doing something serious. It didn't go anywhere. I mean, Kay, I think Andrew makes a good point. I mean, in the short term, Kay will probably lose the first book with Mike, I guess. But a year from now is a very, you know, yeah, maybe he finally climbs that mountain. The CMB thing, I agree with Andrew that in terms of the show itself, it could definitely help them, and it's, you know, they have some sympathy vote now. They get more time. There's less pressure. So I do think it could help the quality of the show. The problem is going to be the musical chairs part of this scenario where, as you move forward, you know, how is this sustainable to have, you know, to be paying two midday shows in addition to Mike? So 2 years from now, I don't know how this is supposed to work once everybody's contracts are up. But in terms of the show itself, I think it will help them and their image.
Do you... Okay, so Neil just stole my thunder because my question was...
Oh, sports talk radio term, stole my thunder. I like it.
Because here's the question. I guess there's no official date yet. FAN has not announced it, but I think Raceman wrote it's going to happen. He's coming back very soon. Do you guys know it? You know, if you know it and you have to save it for your papers, that's fine. But do you even know when they're looking at this to have him back?
I don't know.
Andrew?
I will save it for my paper.
Okay, so Andrew knows, saving it for the New York Post.
I don't necessarily know, but I have an idea.
Okay, so April 24th. Would it be in April or May? May or June? What? May or June?
Is this Chris? Am I talking to Chris Russo? That was like a, I think you said okay. Like,
May or June?
April. It will be October.
May or June?
He's coming back in October.
All right. So let's say he comes back in May, some point in May.
There you go.
Which is
what is that? Does it even matter? I mean.
Well, here's May, my Here's my question. He comes
May
back.
May seems like a reasonable guess.
This is my question. He comes back in May.
May seems like, I think May would be a good guess. I would say May. I'm going to give that to you. But May would be a good guess.
Okay. He comes back in May. Does he win?
He's going to be off the whole summer. Don't forget.
No. That's one of the. There's about 50 questions that still have to be answered. Like, is he still going to get the whole summer off? Is Julio still going to drive him? Who, you know, is poor Brian Monzo? Is he producing both shows or one show? Is there going to be?
You guys know I used to work with Mike Schmidt, who's now at the New York Times, winning Pulitzer Prizes for his coverage of stuff. And then we're doing this. Anyway,
and now you're on this podcast.
But you know, I'd much rather be doing this. Quite honestly.
I was out there with Schmidt yelling at George Steinbrenner too. So,
will there be a TV simulcast? There's still a lot of questions for you guys to fight Raceman over to get these scoops.
There's a lot of questions.
Yeah.
There's a lot of questions.
So
I doubt there will be a simulcast.
So do I.
Because no one wants to
pay. I doubt there will be a sign.
All right, so listen, if you're listening to this podcast and you're in the New York area, Andrew Marchand, New York Post, Neil Best of Newsday, they will have the scoops. They will get all the answers to these questions. Do you guys, like right now, are you a little bit pissed Raceman broke the story that it's official, that he's coming back 3-7?
I don't want to get into this because this always sounds petty. I don't know if that's accurate. I don't know when that story went up.
So
I know you said it at the beginning, but it sounds petty when you say that, but I don't think that's what happened.
Andrew's salty.
I'm
kidding.
You set me up. I mean, what do you do? You said, are you mad about that? I had afternoon, whatever.
I love the way that I feel like you each got a piece of the pie with this story. It was nice the way
it worked
out.
How I look at it. I want the whole pie, but the, you know, I go for the whole pie. How about you, Neil?
Well, yeah, of course, ideally, I'm just trying to get through the day.
Neil's going to have a 5,000-word interview with Mike next week on why he's coming back. I can't wait.
I know. That would be good.
Neil, are you going to drive in with Julio for the
first? I don't think Neil could wait to do it, though. I don't know. He likes publishing. I don't know how much he enjoys doing it, but he likes publishing it.
It's so cliche to use the Godfather line. Just when I thought I was out, they sucked me back in, and then Neil... Neil's living it.
I know, but what I thought of more, like I tweeted earlier, is, you know, the cop who's going to retire next week and then suddenly gets dragged back into one more shootout. I mean, it's, you know, I just wanted to fade away quietly, but I guess I'll stick around.
All right. Well, I'm glad both of you are on the beat. I thank you so much for coming on. It was very late notice. I wasn't going to do it, and then I did it. You're both very kind to come on, and I appreciate it. And good luck covering the Pope.
All right.
Always
fun.
One last question. Anybody? What? How many years do you think he's back for? A contract? Any contract details? How many years?
I don't know. Three.
I don't know contractually how many.
All right. I just want to see how much longer.
Guess three, but it's totally a guess.
I just wanted to know how much longer you'd be covering the Pope. All right. Appreciate it, guys. Be well.
All right.
Thank you. All right. All right, it's a big story in New York. If you're not in New York, you probably didn't listen, so you're fine. But hopefully, if you're not in New York and you're still here, you survive that. But Kevin Harlan was great to start the show. And then Andrew Marchand and Neil Best on the news in New York. It's a bombshell. So that wraps up this episode of the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. We'll see you next week.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily sports podcast network? Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.